Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky, Jeannie Buss, giving out some more interviews and getting Lakers fans all riled up. That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Make another Locked On podcast your second listen of every day. We are going to get to, by the way, Locked On Lakers on YouTube. That's where you go. Fast-growing channel. Appreciate all the support. And you get the fun of watching us do the show as well. A great community there of commenters and all that kind of stuff that's developing. So it's a great place to talk Lakers as well as watch us talk Lakers. We're going to get to this in a second. Eric Pincus on Wednesday put out a story in the wake of the Barrett extension that looks like it's happening in New York. Perhaps Russell Westbrook could be the key now for Utah and New York to actually execute a trade. So we'll talk about what that could look like from the Lakers perspective. But first, Andy, Jeannie Buss, who is promoting the Legacy documentary on Hulu that she is an executive producer of. The team is behind.
It's good.
It is good. Long interview with Sam Amick of The Athletic for his podcast. A lot of stuff from that, Andy, got attention this week. We took Wednesday off, so we're just getting to it now. She talked about Russ. She talked about the organizational structure. She talked about LeBron and his future in LA. What's the first thing that stuck out to you?
Well, I think the Russell Westbrook thing is what really got the most people's attention, pricked up the most people's ears. She said that, quote, from my point of view, Westbrook was our best player last year. This was such an unexpected statement, not just to Laker fans, but frankly to Sam Amick while he was doing this interview, that he realized that in real time, he didn't actually ask her to clarify why the most polarizing and in some respects, anchoring player on the Lakers, Jeannie deemed their best player.
Or I print this without any context whatsoever.
Right. And Jeannie said that, quote, the word I should have used was consistent. He played 78 games last season, which if I were to offer Jeannie a little bit even more clarity advice, I would say most consistently available.
Right.
And what got her in trouble was she was trying too hard, albeit understandably, to put a positive spin on Russell Westbrook's season last year and the potential for next year, because as we often say, Brian, there's a very good chance he's going to be on this team next year, or could be at the very least.
We'll talk about this as the show goes on. The Lakers don't control really any of the scenarios other than, I guess, Indiana. And actually, by the way, Tony East from Locked On Pacers is joining us for Friday's show, talking all about that. Friday's show into the weekend, all about the potential Pacers deal, what the landscape looks like there, and what Miles Turner especially would look like in a Lakers uniform. So that's something to look forward to through the weekend. But like they don't control a lot of these things. Like if it's Donovan Mitchell dependent, then they got to wait for New York and Utah to come to some kind of agreement. And if the Pacers draw a really hard line or demand more stuff, maybe the Lakers could give, or an extra salary, whatever it is, they can't make people say yes. And, you know, and they can't make a bad deal just to get it done. So yeah, Russ could be here. I respect the instinct to try to find ways to build him up, to try not to vilify him, particularly Jeannie's just nice and she doesn't want to vilify players who wear the Lakers uniform. She's certainly not going to do it for people who are currently on the team.
She's not Donald Sterling calling Baron Davis fat from courtside seats.
Right.
That's just not a productive way to build a relationship with your players.
It is not good. It's probably an HR violation from the boss. But I think she is lucky that Sam Amick is a good guy with a, you know, an honest streak in him to go back and follow up, because I'm sure she would have figured out, she would have clarified it with somebody, she would have, but like that quote was immediately diffused by Sam and his reporting, which basically kind of came out at the same time as the podcast, clarifying what she said she meant. And if he hadn't done that, it would have been a news cycle before she's able to fix it.
It also,
and you got to be really, she's got to be more careful with her words.
Right. It also plays a lot better if Sam goes to her to clarify it, as opposed to her realizing, holy crap, I need to convince people that I don't think Russell Westbrook was our best player last year, that he was better than LeBron, better than AD. Mm-hmm. But just another example of this in terms of just the complications of this place that they're in right now with Russell Westbrook and acknowledging that he could be on the team next year. Sam asked about, you know, the well-documented feud. Certainly you and I have discussed this the last few days, between Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverley, and the idea that they could possibly coexist. And Jeannie said, quote, "Yeah, I remember all the video that circulated when the Lakers brought in Matt Barnes, with his relationship with Kobe over the years, being one of the best defenders on Kobe. Then he becomes teammates with Kobe. We've seen these storylines before," adding later, "so it has nothing to do with Russ." And like I said, I think people, they just love to pull up storylines, create something, and that just isn't the case. The problem with that comparison, or if, say, you want to bring up Ron Artest,
right,
you know, then Ron joining the Lakers a year, or really not even a year, one offseason removed from he and Kobe going at each other when Meta was a member of the Rockets and Kobe pretty blatantly elbowed him in the throat. Ron rightly lost his mind, got ejected. The difference is all that stuff was on the court. It was all about basketball. This thing between Russ and Patrick Beverley, at this point, I don't even think is about basketball at all. It is strictly personal. And it is as personal a feud as I can think of in the NBA right now, and frankly, for quite a while. Does that mean it's impossible to, if nothing else, become functional coworkers? No. But it does mean that it's very different than the example Jeannie is trying to spin, knowingly or not.
Right. And, you know, Pat Bev like retweeted or liked some LeBron tweet about Westbrook. And like, you know, so like they're putting a good face forward and all that kind of stuff. But that's still different than actually getting in camp. Dillard, maybe they'll be able to figure it out. Maybe playing on the same team, everybody, you know, it's, you pull in the same direction. It's like, whatever. It was interesting too to hear her talk about the structure of the organization, kind of complaining again about people complaining about it. And so let's do that next, because I know there's some stuff there that stuck out to you as well.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to check in for all your betting needs, for lines, odds, games. Find the reviews, news of every league, including MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, golf, the whole works. The latest odds right now for the future NBA championship 2023 season, according to our friends at Bet Online, the Celtics, currently the odds leader, 5-1, Bucks at 6-1, Golden State 7-1, Brooklyn and the Clippers tied at 7.5-1, Phoenix at 11-1, the Lakers rising from the last time I checked from 14-1 to 12-1 ahead.
They call that the Pat Bev effect.
Mm-hmm. Ahead of the Miami Heat right now. So Vegas seemingly believing a bit more in the Lakers, or just following where the money goes. Either way, BetOnline continues to be top online resource for all your sporting wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you covered. So head to the BetOnline today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts.
All right. So you saw us, Andy. Well, you saw us. I mean, everybody, people saw us doing the show from the Doer Store in Los Angeles, 170 South La Brea. That was Monday and Tuesday's show. Had a great time over there this weekend. And hopefully you looked behind us and saw the clothes. It is incredibly good looking stuff. Very comfortable. very versatile. You could kind of see what we've been talking about in the show for the last couple months. Doer is clothes that adapt to what you're doing, lifestyle clothing that adapts to your lifestyle, performance clothing that kind of performs all day long, no matter what it is that you're doing, going to work, you're out with your friends, you know, you're running around with your kids. You can wear the same stuff throughout the day and it's not going to look, you know, raggedy and gross by the end of it. It's still going to fit you nicely. It matches with everything else that is in your wardrobe. It's a staple that you can wear with anything else that you own. All the fabrics, whether you're talking about the shirts, whether you're talking about the pants, lightweight, comfortable. We're really excited to be working with these guys. Got the jeans, I've got the Live Free Adventure pants, they call them, the No Sweat Jogger, a couple t-shirts, I got a polo. So if you're in LA, you go to 170 South La Brea in Mid-Wilshire, and you can go in there and try the stuff on. If you can't do it, you go to shopdoer.com. However you go there, 15% off if you use our discount code LOCKEDON15. Again, some of the most comfortable clothes you're going to find anywhere, versatile, and you're going to love this stuff. LOCKEDON15 at shopdoer.com or at the store 170 South La Brea. Okay, so Andy, once again, Jeannie Buss complaining about people complaining about Linda Rambis.
Yeah, as Jeannie Buss was talking with Sam Amick about some of the sort of inner workings that have come through in this documentary on Hulu, which... Ryan, I've said, we both are really enjoying it. I think it's really well done. And even if you're somebody like us who really knows a fair amount about this franchise, and have talked with a lot of people who have been, you know, Magic, Kareem, Jerry West, Kobe, like people who've been heavily involved with this organization, you're still going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
She said that one of the goals was, you know, family healing and putting everybody together, see how the family has worked together through good and bad and the ugly, and, you know, just letting people behind that curtain. But also just there's this fascination, she said, with some of the people involved with the front office. And she said, quote, "I think we've always been an open book. We've never really tried to hide anything. Then there became this fascination with the role that Linda and Kurt Rambis play. Like, where do they come from? As if they haven't been there all along. Like I was hiding them all these decades or something." So I don't know what led to that, what caused people to be so curious. And what jumped out to me, because I think Kurt and Linda are, in certain respects, as connected as they are, kind of separate issues.
Yes.
Like, to me, Kurt Rambis is somebody that, do I think the rest of the league would be clamoring to have him as part of their front office? No, I don't.
No.
I don't think he is somebody that would necessarily be in demand. I also think, though, that in a vacuum, if Kurt Rambis was part of your front office with the Lakers or any front office, nobody would necessarily think it's that weird either. It's Kurt Rambis.
Yeah, and I have some thoughts about that, but broadly speaking, I agree with you.
With Linda, who it should be noted for people who are not aware, and it wouldn't shock me if there are people who didn't know this, Linda Rambis, her involvement with the organization predates Kurt's involvement with the organization. This is something that they actually get into in the
documentary. By a fair amount.
Yeah. And, you know, Linda Rambis has been involved with this organization for like 4+ decades. And I have no doubt is a very qualified person to have an important job in this organization, is a smart, accomplished woman. And again, in a vacuum, the idea that she would be, you know, high ranked with the Lakers in and of itself is not that strange. What makes people keep asking about this, and where I think Jeannie does not help herself or this bone of contention at all, is it has been heavily reported that Linda Rambis has a lot of sway in terms of actual basketball decisions, both as somebody that Jeannie leans on for advice, and Jeannie is ultimately the highest shot caller in this organization, but also somebody whose voice matters with Kurt Rambis, you know, voice that matters has sway, period. If Jeannie really wants to put this to bed, at least the speculating, she could just say what Linda Rambis does. She never actually says this and has had multiple opportunities to do it. And by never saying what Linda does, she's actually keeping this storyline going because it adds to this sense of mystery.
And it's interesting because in the same interview, she talks about how when she, people criticize, you lean on Magic, you lean on Phil Jackson. Like, she's like, these are people that I use for process decisions. How should I go about making? I choose the coach. You know, I sign off on the coach. Like, they don't tell me who to hire, who not to hire, whatever. They help me with process. They help. And presumably that includes quote unquote basketball decisions. And a lot of this, and we've had this discussion, and I think it's an interesting one. Like, and I don't even mean it in like a, like, I don't think it's an overly esoteric question or anything like that. Like, what is a basketball decision? And I think everybody can have a slightly different definition of that that still makes sense. But like, if she's telling her to do things or giving her advice on process that leans into a small organization, lean people who are tight with you, that you are, that you can trust, that you've been around or whatever it is, that's not necessarily a quote unquote basketball decision. That isn't, should we trade for, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic or Bogdan, any of the Bogdanoviches. But it influences basketball. It influences what the department looks like. It influences, and it is hard for me to picture her in an advice giving capacity that doesn't do things that empowers Kurt, you know, and that we've seen some reporting about that a lot of what she does is, at least in relation to that side of the world, is boosting Kurt. And, you know, when you were saying before, like about Kurt's role in thing, I think it is weird that Kurt has, not that he works for the organization, but that he's really the only other person in the front office that's like part of the brain trust. Like, that's it. It's Rob and Kurt. And if you were going to pick one guy to surround your president of basketball operations or whatever his technical title is, or whatever, and that's it, you're going to pick Kurt Rambis, and you're the Lakers, and you have access probably to just about anybody you want. And all these, when people talk about the Lakers not spending, this is the stuff that bothers me. It's the lack of infrastructure in the front office. It's not having, you know, a network of really high-end talent. And I don't even just think it's because they're cheap, although I do think the money plays a role in that. I also think it's because their ethos has been always been trained to keeping the circle really, really tight. And that cuts them off from talent. It cuts them off from people. And I wonder who is responsible. And I don't know, but I wonder who in what capacity or how many people are responsible for keeping things the way they are. That's the most mom and poppy part about this organization.
Yeah.
Not just the money. It's that the circle is so small and has always been that way.
Yeah. I mean, they insulate themselves off, not just from perhaps better talent, but just more diversity of perspective.
Yes.
Like, regardless of how qualified you think, for example, Linda Rambis would be to be involved to whatever degree she is with basketball, what could be defined as basketball decisions. What I do know for sure is her perspective comes from having worked with one organization. Rob Pelinka has only been on this side of the table with one organization. Magic, who she leans on, has only been involved with one organization. Joey and Jesse Buss, who you and I both have a lot of respect for, frankly, would like to see them both have more sway and power within the organization. We both think they're quite good at what they do. They nonetheless have only been a part of one.
Right. And Rob, by the way, has a vested interest in keeping the circle around him small. Like, sure. So it's just,
but it reminds me, remember that part in Goodfellas when Karen is talking about getting used to being married to Henry Hill and getting used to the lifestyle of, you know, her mobster husband only being with mobsters, and talking about how she only goes on vacation with Mickey and Jimmy Conway, Robert De Niro's character and his wife. And she said, we're all so very close. I mean, there were never any outsiders around, absolutely never. And being together all the time made everything seem all the more normal. And it feels like they've fallen into that sort of thing where if they had a broader front office, you know, with perspectives from people who've been involved with more organizations, whether you think Kurt Rambis should or shouldn't be there would start becoming it would start feeling less weird or less notable.
It'd be less relevant.
Right.
You know, this is the problem. I mean, for fans who, you know, follow LA sports, this is the problem for years with USC. You know, and they finally have sort of broken out of that mold, and it's, I think, served them well. Maybe one quick point to make out of this, but I want to talk about what Eric Pincus wrote on Wednesday about, you know, the trade landscape, because RJ Barrett has an extension agreement with the Knicks. It's going to change the dynamic of the potential Donovan Mitchell to New York deal. That has an influence on the Lakers, and Eric Pincus at Bleacher Report wrote about how now Russell Westbrook could be the conduit to making that deal happen. So we'll get to that next. All right. So my last thing about this, she said one thing in this interview that I didn't love. And I don't want to harp on it too long, but it just kind of put it. She said it's important to the brand, the Lakers brand, for LeBron James to retire as a Laker. And I get what she's getting at. But anytime I hear the Lakers talk about the need for stars to retire here, the need for stars to be, it always just makes me a little nervous. It makes me a little bit uncomfortable that, you know, the goal here should not be LeBron retires as a Laker. The goal should be both sides play this relationship out in the way that is most beneficial, ideally for both sides. But the Lakers shouldn't, his retiring in LA should not be a priority unless it makes great sense from a basketball perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, there, I guess Jeannie is both very good with media, but she, I think, can have a habit of phrasing things a little bit inelegantly. And look, we've all been there before. It would be interesting to find out exactly what she meant. Like if this is a saying the quiet part out loud in terms of LeBron, not just reinforcing that we are an organization of stars, but also it's important to the brand because we've had one playoff run in our house.
Right. If LeBron's not here, people are going to what do we do? Like,
yeah,
fans demand this.
It's like the line in Animal House when they're going through the pledges. We need the dues.
You want to make sure it's not that. That's what they did with the Kobe extension so many years ago. That was fans are freaking out. Don't look behind the curtain. Let's try to calm everyone down kind of thing that just, it wasn't well thought.
And so
I would have loved to know, it was a small thing that stuck out to me, and I don't want to, and we got other things we want to get to before the end of the show, but it was just, I was like, whoa, that's not how I would have phrased that.
Sure. And look, to give Jeannie the benefit of the doubt, and I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt in a way that I don't think is implausible. She might mean that it is important to her for the Laker brand because she thinks it's important for players around the league to see the way the Lakers take care of the true stars.
That's undoubtedly important.
Magic,
yeah,
Kareem,
absolutely.
Kobe, I think in her case, hoping LeBron. And that's something that I do think has value, not just in terms of bringing in your next star, but I think it's actually something Jeannie cares about, like as a person, like as an ethos. I actually think she cares about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there's, by the way, is a lot of validity to that belief. It's not a bad...
And I don't think that's an implausible...
Like treating your stars and showing them what it is to be part of this organization and what that means for you, like, forever.
Yeah.
I don't object to it. Brand supremacy... I don't want to make a screaming sirens out of it. It was just interesting to me. It stuck out, the phrasing, but I don't necessarily. I would love to talk to her more about it. I think the way you put it is great. We're gonna get into the Indiana thing on Friday, really in depth for that show. But you know, another scenario floated where the Lakers perhaps can keep. Where Utah and New York would really need the Lakers in some ways, to kind of be a go-between. The Lakers would give up a pick to get rid of Westbrook, but then would take on some other stuff. Like Eric Pincus at Bleacher Report floats the possibility of Evan Fournier, Bogdanovich, and Cam Reddish, who's a player the Lakers have been interested in. for, I guess, for a while.
It's clutch client.
Right. Ending up here. But the Lakers presumably would keep a pick. And you get sort of lesser players, certainly, then nobody in that deal is as good as Miles Turner. That's for sure. But you do keep a pick. What do you feel about that? Like, if the Lakers come out of this, you trade Westbrook, you give up the pick, you get Bogdanovich, Cam Reddish, and you take on Evan Fournier's deal.
Well, I mean, a very cynical but I think practical way of looking at it is it makes you at least potentially better than what you had with Russell Westbrook. It certainly gives you more quality depth than you have with just Russ himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of that pick could just come down to you will need it to eventually move Evan Fournier again. You know what I mean? Like, and that isn't
you took one of my things I don't like about that deal.
Sure. But things. If you think Evan Fournier could, if nothing else, be a bit of stopgap help for this season.
He's not a terrible player. Evan Fournier is not a terrible player.
No, he has rarely elevated a team past what you thought they could do anyway, but
right, but he's not terrible. And he could serve a role in this team and Bogdanovich. And actually the guy I'm least interested in this whole deal in terms of somebody I actually think would contribute is Cam Reddish.
Yeah. I'm not convinced Cam Reddish.
I do not understand the fascination the Lakers apparently have with Reddish.
I sometimes wonder, I mean, really, again, not to keep harping on this, conspiracy theory or just true cynicism. I sometimes wonder how much the interest reportedly the Lakers have in Reddish is just more clutch would like to see Cam Reddish as a Laker.
Well, I'm sure it's a lot of that.
No, but I mean, in terms of where it's coming from, like how much of this is true interest from the Lakers versus this is something they'd like to have.
I agree with you.
Self-fulfilling prophecy
absolutely can come from clutch.
Cause he really has not proven himself as an NBA player at all. Granted, he's
clutch
very
combined
young
with,
right,
the initial interest that they apparently had going back to the year he was drafted.
I would say that all things being equal, they are a better team if they have to give up both of those picks to get Miles Turner and Buddy Hield, because ultimately, as you said, Miles Turner is a better player than any of the other ones involved, and he and Anthony Davis could theoretically be a tandem that you put pieces around for the next 4 to 5 years. I think it's a better use of two draft picks, arguably, than one saving one. Because again, if part of what you're thinking about is capital needed to move one of the guys that you just acquired, it speaks to the quality of the deal.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, whether it's, guys like Malik Beasley and Bogdanovich and, Jordan Clarkson or whatever, they're all kind
Mike Conley.
Of, yeah, they're all kind of in the same broad range of players you'd want to assemble. So, I mean, a trade like that could give the Lakers more roster balance. You add a couple 2-3s, maybe you can pick up another larger player. Now that you've traded Stanley Johnson, you need another shooting guard type, and Fournier brings a little shooting, Bogdanovich certainly brings some shooting, a little bit of length on the wing and all that kind of stuff. But to me, it's like we've talked about this a lot. You get one, you really functionally get one swing preserving. Maybe you can red paperclip your way to taking these guys, these chopped up bits of the Westbrook contract, and making them into something better. But like you said, if you have to use the second pick to get rid of Evan Fournier, what have you really accomplished here? Unless that player coming back is really good. But now you're talking about, like, when is that going to happen? So if I had a deal where I could get the best player and a guy in Buddy Hield, who I would also put in the Bogdanovich, Fournier, they're all in the same.
He's no worse than those guys.
I don't think so. In some ways he's better. In many ways he's, in some ways he's worse. I mean, there isn't a player in any deal that you could trade for that's going to be a worse defender than Buddy Hield. Like, I don't care what the construction is. He's probably worse than Russ. Maybe he is. I don't know. But I don't think you gain enough. And holding on to that last pick doesn't do anything. One pick in 2029, like, what's that going to get you? So if you have an opportunity to make a deal that brings you a, that one tier below, you know, all-star kind of guy, which I think Miles Turner can kind of be, certainly an all NBA defense caliber player on that side of the ball. I would rather do that than try to preserve one pick and, you know, chop it up into pieces that are fine, but don't materially change your chances of winning a title.
To your point, though, also, though, about the you only get to move these picks once and you need to make sure that you use them as wisely as possible and, you know, surgically as possible. We've both emphasized this a lot during the offseason. Want to give the Lakers some quick props. Michael Scotto from Hoops Hype, in a conversation with Jovan Buha, reported that this was before the Lakers moved Talen Horton-Tucker to Utah for Patrick Beverley. But in some of these conversations, Indiana wanted not just the two first-round picks, but also Talen Horton-Tucker. And the Lakers would take back Daniel Tice, giving them, counting AD, five centers on this roster. Rob Pelinka,
a lot of centers.
Rob Pelinka did the right thing in saying, no, yeah.
That's not them being cheap because they don't want to pay Tice. That is them not wanting to give up an asset to take on somebody in Tice.
That's them giving up
they shouldn't.
All
yes.
of their assets, all of them. That would have been a horrible
yes.
trade.
Awful. So that one was good. And they turned around and they made a deal that is better. And they could still end up maybe yes. making this Indiana deal. So, all right. So again, Tony East coming up on Friday. It's going to be a great episode. Yeah, that's all I have to say. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the whole podcast and all of that. And we'll see everybody on Friday.